the Gentlemen's Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello, and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, I tend to reserve my bouts of football-related depression for when good, capable, valiant Auburn teams try their hardest and somehow just fall short, as with the Florida State game in 2013, or when an Auburn team does everything asked of it and outside forces conspire to deny them anyway, as with 1983, 1993, and 2004. But you know when I don't get that upset? I don't get that upset when an Auburn team clearly has none of those qualities and is just not that great, at least at the moment. So, I'm really not that disappointed or upset this week. I was last week, because I still thought those things about this team. I don't now. So, there you go.
So, you're saying you have clarity.
I have clarity, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, if I felt like we'd gone out there on Saturday, the last three weekends, and fought and scratched and clawed and just been bested by a team that just somehow managed to put in a better effort than we did, even though we did everything humanly possible, then I'd be pretty depressed.
Well, or fought really hard and maybe lost to a team that had more talent than we did.
Sure, yeah. But let me put it this way. If you are so, and I don't mean you personally, I mean if any of our listeners or anybody out there that doesn't listen, anybody, if you find yourself utterly miserable right now from the results of that game on Saturday and the previous 2 weeks, I mean, if you base so much of your self-esteem and your happiness on the outcome of a bunch of teenagers colliding with each other for 3 hours on Saturday before they go back to school on Monday, then you might want to reassess your priorities, because it's just not worth getting that upset about. We went into this season with certain expectations and hopes, certainly. But you know what? It's not working out that way. And tonight we're going to try to work through it, maybe see if we can figure out a few of the reasons why and what's going on. But honestly, I'm not going to lose any sleep. I'm not going to get any ulcers. I'm not going to lose any more hair than I already have over it, because, you know, we're Auburn fans. We're used to this kind of thing, right? I mean, for how many years have we seen this roller coaster go up and down?
Let me ask you this. This is a serious thought I was having Saturday night. Why can't we ever just be like, you know, it's like the difference between us and Georgia. We're never going to be just consistently good. No. It's always going to be this roller coaster. We're either going to be great or mm-hmm. we're going to be terrible.
Yep. That's our fate. That's who we are. That's what you sign up for when you go orange and blue, John. That is our identity. I honestly thought going into this season that could be overcome and that we were in a position finally to break that. You know, I said it many times. I said it on Twitter. I said it on our show. I said many times that every single time that we went up and then went down, there was always a concrete reason you can point to. There wasn't a curse. There wasn't any mojo or any hoodoo or any whammer jammer. There was always a logical reason, like a coach got fired or left, or a player went to the NFL, or something like that happened, you know. And I said, this year's going to be different. I'm 100% confident because we've gotten over that. We're recruiting at the right level now. We've got the right coaches. We've got the right players. We've got the right identity. And, you know, the season has started and we don't have any of those things, I don't think, at least in terms of for the moment, at the moment. Mm. We can get him back. Sure, we can get him back. But so therefore I have abandoned that previous position. I have ducked out on that previous position like Rudy Ford trying to tackle Fournette, yeah. And instead, I am now of the opinion that when you are born into the Auburn family, or when you choose to be part of the Auburn family, this, my friends, is what you get. And if you don't like it, go be a bandwagon Alabama fan, except not this week.
Well,
not this week, but go be a bandwagon fan for one of those programs that, that enjoys a little more stability. Because I don't want you on. I don't want you in my family, honestly.
Let me disagree with you about something.
Okay.
I think it's okay to be upset about effort.
Yeah.
I don't have any problem. I know Auburn's not going to win every football game, you know, they ever play. I get that.
Right.
But I have a problem when I, you know, see players who aren't giving everything they have in the football game, in my opinion. And I get it. I mean, I don't want to tackle Leonard Fournette, you know? But, you know, when you don't run full speed over there and help, then you're basically abandoning your teammate to stand in front of the 18-wheeler by himself and get run over. And I have a hard time with that. And I thought, and I know it was brutally hot, and you know, things got very quickly out of hand in that game.
As usual.
What? No, I mean, I said last week on the podcast and in the column, and I said on Twitter before the game, the first 5-10 minutes were the key to the whole game. And in the first 5 or 10 minutes, we gave it all away. It was over.
Yep.
And so I get it from that standpoint, but when some guys are still out there, you know, killing themselves and laying on the line and some other people aren't, that's when I have a problem with it. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. Well, the question before us now is, can this team still get it together and become one of those brave, heroic squads that at least puts up a fight and wins more games than it looks right now like they'll be able to win?
Well, that's not a high bar right now.
Well, right. Well, I don't know. I think it is. I think winning more than 4 right now is a high bar.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you said win more than we expect them to win right now. And I said,
yeah. I mean, or is this year going to go down as one of those historic 1998, 2008, 2012? God, I hope it goes that far. And I mean, when it comes to that question, neither I nor you nor any other fan can answer it. There's only a small group of people that can answer that question, and that's the players and the coaches, the team. And I mean, it's up to them to show us, but there's nothing I can do, you know, except talk about it and try to help people understand it and come to grips with it. But there's nothing I can do to help the team get better. There's nothing I can do to help, you know, to help understand what's going on any better. So, we'll just try to talk through it a little bit here and see what we think. But I will say this. It's times like this that lesser podcasts just stop recording and go do something else.
Yep.
Maybe they go make a nice cooking show. Maybe they give how-tos on fly fishing. I don't know. But not us. Because you know what, John? We started this show in the middle of what season?
2009.
No. This show, not the column.
Oh. 2012.
Yes. If we could start in the middle of the 2012 season and show up for work every Sunday night or Monday night to record this, we can get through anything, John.
That's true. Listen, this is no 2012. I mean,
well,
not yet, but I mean, it's.
Well, we beat Louisville, so that's a leg up on 2012 right there.
There you go.
I think if we played Louisville again, I'm not sure what might happen.
Hey, that's 0-3 Louisville to you.
It is. That's right. That's right. So, well, all right. So I guess the first thing we should do is kind of look at our overall reactions, right?
I mean, like we said, it spiraled very, very quickly out of control. And, you know, the big Fournette run on the, you know, basically the first play of scrimmage and then getting in the end zone. And then, you know, Auburn got the ball. We were moving it. We got a couple first downs. It looked like we were going to do something. And then the backward pass. When the ball slipped out of Jeremy's hand and went backward, that was the point where I think a lot of Auburn fans were like, holy crud.
That little put that on a loop, and that is the season, I'm afraid, right now, as it stands right now.
You know, I mean, I know that kind of stuff happens to good, really, really good quarterbacks, too. Quarterbacks playing at a high level. I mean, it happened to Jameis Winston in that playoff semifinal against Oregon. But that moment, we were moving the ball, looked like things were happening. And when that happened to him, I was like,
yeah.
So, and then, you know, the defense couldn't tackle Fournette and the offense couldn't get anything going. And you and I have said for, you know, years and years and years, you cannot run side to side in LSU on offense. I mean, that is a 0% chance of success recipe.
Right.
All the little side to side passes and runs to the side, sweeps and stuff. I mean, you'd be setting something up with that, but you're never going to gain enough yardage to win the game doing it that way. You have to go straight at them throw it straight at them, and we couldn't do that.
Well, I was I had a funny feeling about this game. I mean, I had been saying I thought we would win. I thought that we would win. They had not shown enough against Mississippi State to make me think that they were all that good. If nothing else, this game made me think Mississippi State's a little better than I expected, which is a little depressing when you think about who we play on Saturday. I tweeted earlier that I was doing some book design on a new book that we have coming out, not written by you or me, but someone close to us and on a subject very close to us, Auburn related, and I was doing some design on it. And I have our bedroom TV right next to the desk where my computer and monitors and all are. And so I was just working on the book all morning, and when the game started, I leaned back in the chair, watched the game for a few plays. It only took really one, you know, and then I just went back to designing the book. So I just kept one eye on it the whole time, but I really wasn't going to get invested in it unless there was a reason to, and there nearly never really much was. Digging into some of the numbers in this game, I mean, it's hard to imagine our leading rusher was Jeremy Johnson.
Well, he had the one long run. I mean, came after halftime and it ran the read option and he kept it, ran up the middle for a 60-yard score touchdown. It was a bizarre play. I think everybody in the stadium was shocked, including him.
Yeah. But he finished with a total of 41 when you take away like the fumble and the sacks and stuff. Mm-hmm. But even then, he was the leading rusher because Rock got more carries than any other running back. I'm sure you were upset about that, but he held on to
it. Well, I mean, that was more of a second half, let's fit, you know, we got to do something different kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that point, they had to find, you know, nothing was working, and they were like, all right, let's find somebody who can get a spark. So, I mean, they gave the ball to Kerryon a lot. They gave the ball to Rock a lot, and I didn't have a problem with that.
Yeah, they all got around the same amount of yards. I mean, Rock had a long 17-yard run, and then he had 7 carries for 20 after that. Barber had a 10-yard run, and then he had 6 for 24. After that, Kerryon Johnson had 4 for 14, but one of them was 6, so 3 for 8. So just nothing was really working too well in the ground game. But I didn't feel like this is weird. Help me out here. I'm thinking back now to how the game went and how our offense went. I mean, I know that part of it was that our running backs' carries were spread out. Like if you add up running backs as opposed to like Stanton Truitt and Ricardo Lewis each doing 2 runs. I mean, if you add up our running back
carries,
I just didn't feel like like we got many. I mean, let me see. Rock got 8. Peyton Barber got 7 is 15. Johnson got 4 is 19. And Javon Robinson got 2 is 21. 21 carries by the running backs this game total. I mean, am I crazy or is that not many?
It's not many.
And Jeremy carried it 12, but I'm sure some of those are like fumbles and whatever. So, I mean, did we just not have the ball very much? Because it kept seeming like the running game was working. I didn't get the feeling like I've gotten in some Auburn LSU games in LSU over the years where, you know, like think about 2003, where, you know, they gave the ball to Cadillac and he was just losing 2 yards every time he touched the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel that way. I felt like we were getting yardage with the running game, but it just seemed like we never went anywhere with it.
No, I mean, we weren't picking up first downs, and we, you know, and the other part is I think we got behind, you know?
Yeah.
So we looked around and we were behind. I mean, this is the kind of thing that'll drive you crazy. Like in the game, they had 20 first downs and we had 16. The difference was that, like, you know, they didn't need first downs because every other play they were going in the end zone.
That's the truth. Yeah, we got them down to the goal. We held them on the goal line to like third down every time, and then they'd score.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's one thing for sure about an Auburn team, even in a good year, is it can look miraculous on defense on first and second down, but you put our defense in third down, doesn't matter what the circumstances are, you're going to get 10, 15 yards or a touchdown. It just seems inevitable. So, well, any other reactions during the game? I believe you didn't even hang around for all. I wasn't even paying attention to it, and you left, right?
No, I mean, I watched the game. I went in the later half, I paused it, went and got a pizza and came back because I was hungry and it was, you know, we were getting crushed at that point. But I went back and watched the end of it. But it was what it was. I mean, you know, you were talking about the drives or whatever. Here's our drives in the game. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. First drive. Mm-hmm. 8 plays, net 10 yards, punt.
Is that the one where he fumbled it backwards?
Yeah.
Okay. So we were actually moving the ball pretty well, and then suddenly it was 3rd and 19 or something.
Second drive, 7 plays, 17 yards, interception. Third drive, 4 plays, 25 yards, punt. Fourth drive, 4 plays, 9 yards, punt. Fifth drive, 3 plays, 4 yards, punt. So, I mean, you know, then we're at, you know, at this point, it's after halftime. It's after halftime, right, at this point. So those were our drives in the first half. We come out, 4 plays, 75 yards, touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
3 plays, 1 yard, punt. 4 plays, 4 yards, fumble.
Mm.
6 plays, 59 yards, touchdown. 10 plays, 7 yards, touchdown. 3 plays, 4 yards at a punt. So, I mean, it really was, you know, in the first half, you know, we had no success at all, really. Our longest drive was 25 yards. And couldn't get anything going, couldn't get a bunch of first downs. And I think the bulk of our yards came on 3 drives in the game, the ones where we scored on. Because other than those 3 drives, we didn't have a drive longer than 25 yards. So that's what I look at. And
one of those drives was just a kind of a freak play.
Yes. So, all right. You want to talk about Jeremy first or the run defense?
Well, let me ask you this. At the press conference, Gus just kept asking him for specifics. What do we do? You know, what are you going to do? How do you address this? What do you do about Jeremy? What are you going to do about this? And his answer every time was, oh, we just got to get better.
We'll evaluate everything.
But he just kept saying, well, we just got to get better. And I'm just not quite sure what get better means. I mean, I know what it means in the macro sense, but what does that mean in a functional sense?
Well, I mean, means we got, what they said is we got to reevaluate every single position. But Elisha came out tonight and said Jeremy Johnson's the starter on Saturday.
Well, I mean, as we've been saying all week, if you, you know, Jeremy's already kind of messed up, but the way that the receivers are playing, you could mess up Sean White too, right?
I mean, you know, we talked after last week, and I said I wouldn't have benched Jeremy or whatever. But at halftime of the LSU game, I'd had a serious thought about playing Sean White. And maybe the only reason I didn't is because it was at Baton Rouge, and we were getting our brains beat in or whatever, and it might not have done any good. But if Jeremy Johnson comes out and starts really poor in this game, I'd play Sean White.
Well, I mean, do you take the chance on really messing up White if you put him in with the team, the rest of the team around him playing this way? I mean, that's a weird question, but I'm serious.
Well, I mean, he's on the team. I mean, if he, you know, if he is, listen, if you don't play him, maybe he transfers after the year if he's unhappy and the team's bad. So, and again, quarterback is different than every other position on the field. And one of the ways it's different is that you really are the leader. And the way you act and the way you carry yourself and the way you play on the field carries over to the rest of the team. And right now, Jeremy Johnson doesn't have any confidence. You can see it.
Yeah.
And it's in the way he throws the ball and the way he plays and the way he acts. And he doesn't have confidence in his abilities. And I don't know where it went, but it's not there. And, you know, so the only way he's going to get it back is either by going out there and having tremendous success and it all, you know, clicking again, or, you know, he's going to have to just go find it within himself. But right now, that lack of confidence is like an anchor that the whole team is tied to, and we threw it over the side. And you either got to say, okay, with it, you know, we're sticking with Jeremy, and that anchor is going to pull the whole ship down, or at some point you have to say, we're going to see what Sean White can do. I mean, and sometimes, you know, a quarterback change can be positive. I mean, it can spark things. I mean, and if he comes out and makes a couple plays, then maybe everybody else picks up their game. I mean, and I'm not saying this to be mean or because I don't like Jeremy or whatever, but I mean, I that's how I feel about it. I think that he, yeah, the way the NFL evaluates quarterbacks is really stupid a lot of times, but part of it is part of the things they do look at are psychological, and to be a quarterback on a, you know, a major college team or an NFL team, you have a little bit, you have to be kind of an alpha male, kind of, you know, if we're going somewhere, I'm driving kind of attitude. Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make any sense at all?
Yes, yes.
And I just think that Jeremy doesn't have confidence in his abilities, and that's translating into poor play on the field. And this is the thing I wanted to know is, like, what do they see at practice every week? Like, is he out there running the plays perfectly and completing the passes perfectly and reading the defense every time perfectly, and then it just gets in the game and falls apart? That's the part I'm not sure about. But I if Jeremy goes out there and like throws an interception early or fumbles early or is completely ineffective early, then I would play Sean White.
Well, here's the thing that I noticed that's really puzzling me. I thought that we made a big dedication this offseason to quote unquote getting our edge back. And being more physical and tough, right? And LSU, Jacksonville State, looked like an NFL team, and our guys looked like a junior high team in terms of size and power and attitude and just tough. It looked like LSU was chained in a box with a bunch of badgers, rabid badgers, and trying to claw their way out with their bare hands before they got eaten. And they were just, you know, that was just, there was no stopping them. They were determined. They were desperate. They were furious. Our guys looked like they were sipping tea in between plays and then getting run over and then dusting themselves off and saying, may I have another?
Well, let's stay on the offense for a minute before we go to the run defense. But I think that same thing is on the offense because we talked about Jeremy. What is this offense about? It's about running the freaking football, and we can't run the ball. We're terrible at running the football. And some of it's offensive line, and some of it's the running backs, and some of it's the, you know, the play call and the design. And some of it is that, you know, what we talked about before, like, is this not going to work unless the quarterback can run? And that's
does this offense really only work at this level when you have – I don't mean like Tulsa, but I mean – does it only work at this level when you got somebody that's a double threat? And I mean, remember that the 2009 offense was not that bad.
No, it wasn't. Auburn was effective in 2009. So, I mean, but let me ask you this. In 2013 and 2014, we had Nick Marshall run a quarterback, but we had guys come in and run the Wildcat. Okay. Yeah. In 2015, we got Jeremy out there struggling like crazy, and nobody's coming in to run the Wildcat. So what the heck is that?
The
2009 offense, the Chris Todd offense, second in the SEC in total yards. Okay, so you don't have to have a running quarterback, but you have to have you either have to have that or a quarterback that can pass the ball well and accurately. And right now we don't have either.
Well, where is our receiving core? I mean, we've seen Ricardo Lewis. He did catch one pass for 2 yards in this game.
I think Ricardo Lewis has, you know, shown up or whatever. I mean, I feel like he's doing what they're asking him to do.
Duke had a couple of garbage time catches at the very end.
But again, like he had another play early in the game on a third down when Jeremy threw him the ball, and it wasn't a great pass, but it was kind of a 50-50 he could make a play and get it thing, and he didn't get it. And those are plays that he made last year that he's not making anymore. So I don't know what's going on with him, but that's what I see. He's not the same player.
But I mean, where's all of our other receivers?
I don't know.
I thought we had like 6 or 7 pretty decent, including some young ones. I mean, Stanton Truitt caught one pass. Melvin Ray caught one pass. Jason Smith caught one pass.
Well, that's the other part is like, again, what is this offense? We run the ball and we throw the ball down the field. Okay. We don't throw the ball down the field at all.
No.
The past 2 games, we haven't done it at all, and we ought to be sending Melvin Ray and these other guys down the field and just chucking the ball down there.
Yeah,
you know, 30, 40, 50 yards down the field, and you know, throw it up and hope for pass interference or something. I don't know, but
they've got to seriously reevaluate what we're doing on offense this week. They've just got to reevaluate everything.
I mean, we talked about Sean White. I'm backed at the, you know, put Jason Smith in at the Wildcat and run that a good bit on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, has as good a chance of anything.
Pretend it's 2009. Let Sean White throw the ball and Jason Smith run the ball and let Jeremy just
go back and forth,
chill out for a little bit and get his head together.
That's right. But you're right. And here's the real question you're asking with the receivers is who – when you get the ball in their hands, who on our offense can make a play? Like who can make some people miss or run over them and get 10 or 15 or 20 yards?
Well, nobody's even getting the ball in their hands, though.
But I'm saying you hand it to them on a sweep or whatever, or you throw the ball to them like on the side of the line of scrimmage. Who on our offense right now would you say that's the guy I want to get the ball to?
I think they're all capable of that. They're not getting the ball.
Uh-uh.
They're not getting the ball, John. Look, how many receptions? Rock had 2 and Kerryon had 3. They're running backs. Among the receivers, the leading receiver in terms of catches was Duke, and his first catch didn't come until like 2 minutes to go in the game. So other than the last 2 minutes of the game, and not counting running backs, the leading receiver caught one pass. How are the receivers supposed to do anything you're asking them to do when they're catching at most one pass?
I think that's fair.
One. Stanton Truitt, one catch. Melvin Ray, one catch. Jason Smith, one catch. Ricardo Lewis, one catch. And when you add all four of them together, their total yards are...
28.
Yeah. Wow.
That should be a drive.
That should be one play.
But I'm saying like that four catches for 20 yards, that should be a drive with a bunch of runs mixed in where we score.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just don't know how we know what they can do because they never have the ball.
That's fair.
I mean, I do agree that if we put Sean White in, we might at least spread the ball around a little bit more. You know what it reminds, here's what makes me think of. This just came to me and I want to see what you think. Cause it's similar in styles and it's similar in situations. When Florida in 1993 came to Auburn, I think it was 93, they might have already gone to, actually, I think it happened in both 93 and 94. In 93 and 94.
But the Terry Dean thing?
Yeah. In 93 and 94, Terry Dean was the guy that Spurrier and Florida were hyping up as their big time passer, the one that could chuck it deep, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in both games, if I recall correctly, but definitely 94, Dean came in the game with lots of yardage. There was Heisman talk and all that. And every time he threw the ball deep, we'd knock it down or intercept it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what put Florida back in both of those games, at least for a while, was who'd they bring in?
Was it Werfel or was it
before
him?
It was Danny Werfel. Mm-hmm. And when they brought Werfel in, they quit chucking it downfield and they did a bunch of screens and short slants and stuff like that. Now, he was super accurate. In that scenario, Jeremy is Terry Dean and Sean White could be Danny Werfel. Now, I'm not saying, you know, that Sean White's going to win a Heisman or anything. I'm just saying in that scenario, in terms of abilities and what they're known for, if your guy that chucks it downfield is getting intercepted, you might want to go to the Danny Werfel guy. What do you think?
I could see that analogy. Again, like you made a fair point about the receivers. Like we genuinely don't know. I mean, we got to get them the ball and more, let them try to make plays. So, what about the running backs then? Like, who would you start? Who would you give the ball to 25 times against Mississippi State?
Well, I mean, we saw Javon Robinson carry the ball twice for 3 yards and 1 yard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we really got a good look. I don't know if he's still hurt and they just tried to give him a shot or what out there. But if we say that Robinson can't go, and I don't know that for a fact at all, but let's just say, and I like what they're doing with Kerryon, which is just kind of mixing him up a little bit, you know, mixing him in here and there. Cause he seems effective when he kind of comes in. He's kind of a wild card, just like, Jason Smith is. Among the other two running backs, I think a nice ratio of like 12 for Barber to 8 for Rock Thomas seems to be right now what's working or what could work. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I said some stuff about Barber and that he's playing hard or whatever, but he's not going to run over anybody and I don't think he's going to run by anybody on an SEC defense. So, we'll see. I mean, again, like I don't trust Rock cause the fumble thing. I mean, he's much more explosive than the other two. And I think he could make some big plays if we gave him the ball a bunch and, you know, run away from people and stuff. But, you know, all of these things, passing the ball and running the ball, depend on the offensive line too. And they got their ass kicked on Saturday.
Yeah.
I mean,
Rock and Peyton's statistics are almost exactly the same. Rock got one more carry than Peyton Barber did. Did you expect Peyton Barber would only get 7 carries in this game?
No, but I mean, he wasn't doing anything, and we were getting killed, and, you know.
Well, he was. He was averaging 4.9 yards a carry. That's not bad.
Yeah, but I mean, again, like, he'd get 4, and then we'd throw an incomplete pass, and then, you know, he'd get 1, and then we'd punt. So it was, you know, or we'd hand it to somebody else and end around or whatever.
I just look at our numbers on offense, and I don't – it looks like one quarter of action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it doesn't look like one bad quarter of action. It looks like we had the ball for about 7 minutes the whole game. I mean, like, look at LSU by comparison. Fournette had 19 carries. Brandon Harris had 8. Darius Geis had 6. Darrell Williams had 8. Dante Jackson had 1. And Nick Brossette had 4. I mean, all of that together, 411 yards, add all of our running together, it's 160. 37 carries.
That goes to us talking about the Auburn run defense, which was historically bad on Saturday, and that was the most painful part of the game to watch, is when the other team is running. I mean, we've done this to other people. We did it to Missouri in that championship game. You know, when the team is running and you can't stop them, and there's nothing you can do about it.
That's
where we were on Saturday. And, you know, I think Lawson not playing didn't help, but, I mean, he wasn't the only one. But, you know, the defensive line got pushed around. I thought the linebackers played their worst game in years. I mean, I thought the Auburn linebackers were terrible on Saturday, and the defensive backs weren't a lot better. I mean, Jonathan Jones made a great effort to track down Fournette on that first play. I thought he showed a lot of heart on that, not giving up. And some of the other tackles, you know, jumping in there to try to bring him down and stuff. But, I thought the linebackers were really, really bad in this game, getting out of position easily and getting run over and stuff. And I thought the defensive line did make a lot of plays. Their offensive line really opened up holes and controlled them. We didn't get into backfield and disrupt anything. And we certainly never put them in like third and long and got pressure on the quarterback or anything. So, I'll say again, like I thought Tim Irvin played hard. I mean, I thought he continued to do stuff, but, you know, neither Holland nor Cowart did a whole lot. I mean, again, but I view them as more pass rusher kind of guys. In this kind of game, they were overwhelmed. So,
I mean, I know the defense really, really struggling. I'm going to ask you something about that in a second. But one last thing about the running backs. I don't feel like the running game was that bad. I just felt like they didn't get a chance. They ran the ball. I mean,
but it was like we run it, we don't get a first down, we punt. That was it.
No, it was like we run it and then we throw an incomplete pass and we punt, or we run it and then we throw an interception and we punt, or we run it and we take a sack and we punt. I mean, I felt like if we'd run the ball 3 consecutive times on any single thing, we would have gotten a first down. We were moving the ball on them on the ground.
That's fair. So let me ask you this then. Given where Gus has been with this team, and given that, I fully expect us to go like almost medieval on offense if Jeremy stays a quarterback. To like, we are going to run the ball and be stubborn about it and punt. And we are not going to throw the ball.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, you know, sometimes Gus gets like that. We're going to run the ball until it works.
You're right.
And I think it could be like that.
Let me ask you one thing about the defense, then we'll move on here. I've heard some people, knowledgeable people, saying that the defensive line is the biggest problem of all, which is one of those things that's harder to see for the layman, right?
Sure.
But, you know, people have said that the defensive line is such a problem, it dwarfs all the other problems, including quarterback. And that the one person that needs to be tossed overboard after this season is Rodney Garner. What are your thoughts on that? And followed closely by Lance Thompson.
I don't know about that. I mean, Thompson's not impressing me right now, but I expressed some concern about the defensive tackle before the season.
Yes.
You know, who in the defensive line can make plays? Lawson, Montrevious Adams. And did you see Adams in that game? He disappeared.
He did.
I mean, LSU said, we're taking him out of the game plan, and nobody else could do anything. I think that, you know, the other guys that are in there, you know, I don't think any of them are difference makers. How about that? I mean, I think they're just kind of there.
Yeah.
You know, Dontavious Russell, Maurice Swain, you know, those kind of guys. And you get past them, and it's like, you know, Devereaux Lawrence. I mean, I think all those guys are just kind of there. And I think none of them are above average SEC defensive linemen. I mean, Lambert played well at times last year, but like he got, you know, messed up on one of the first plays in this game. He was never the same.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to have a lot of size and a lot of depth to take what LSU dished out in that game.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And we don't have it. I mean, you know, you get to a point in the game, you're playing, you know, Jamel President and one of the true freshmen at, you know, with defensive ends, and they're, you know, running the counter or the sweep on that side. I mean, those guys are going to stop it.
We looked small and frail.
It's fair
against LSU's.
Fair. I mean, it was bad. I mean, this is the thing I thought about is the SEC. You win on the lines of scrimmage, and right now we're getting killed on the lines of scrimmage. Both of them, every game.
Mm-hmm.
The only, again, like we've had one good half, and that was the first half against Louisville when Lawson was playing. And that was, we looked good on both sides of the ball in that first half. And then after that, I don't think either line is you know, had a very successful game. So.
Well, all I can say is...
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
I'm assuming that our listeners have some questions this week.
I don't know why they'd have any questions, Van. All right. Our first question we're going to read comes from Reynolds Wolf.
I didn't even ask for questions this week. That should tell you everything that you need to know.
We got plenty.
I didn't even ask. I didn't even think about it. So there you go.
All right, our first question comes from Reynolds Wolf, and he says...
I've heard of him.
He says, I would love your and John's almost instant gut reaction to this first question. You have to answer within 3 seconds, just your impulse answer. Are you ready?
Yeah. Oh, God.
In overall ability, is Jeremy Johnson closer to Kyle Frazier or Jason Campbell at this stage?
Well,
Three, two, one, answer.
Right now, he's Kyle Frazier because Jason Campbell ended his career pretty darn good. But if you go back
Campbell struggled at the beginning.
He did.
Is he Jason Campbell early or is he Kyle Frazier?
Early Jason Campbell could still break off a 30-yard run for a touchdown here and there.
So he broke off a 60-yard run for a touchdown.
So he's closer to Kyle Frazier right now, which pains me to say.
I think he's closer early stage Jason Campbell, but we'll see. All right. The question number two, has Gus lost his team?
Well, he hasn't found it. I mean, it's clearly wandering around in the wilderness somewhere. Right? I mean, it's not.
I don't think Gus has lost the team or whatever.
Because losing the team implies you're not going to get it back, I think.
Well, I mean,
I think it's hanging by a thread.
Well, and this, we talked about this a lot in our 2012 episodes, which if you're ever, you know, in need of really bringing down in your life, you can go back and listen to those. But we talked about, for example, the Leffler offense. Again, you have to believe in the plan that the coaches send you out there with. You have to believe that they have put you in the best position to do your job and win the game. And you wonder sometimes if the players 100% believe that.
Yeah.
I don't think they've lost a team. Like, I think we got hit with a sledgehammer in the first 2 minutes. It got out of control, and they're like, well, we'll, you know, live to fight another day. Reynolds' third question is, what in the name of all things holy was Gus wearing on the sideline? He says, was it a golf shirt? He says, it was a hellish garment and not suitable for dining attire at my fine Waffle House. He says, the shirt is probably why they lost.
If it's something as simple as fix as that, then I hope that Reynolds is right.
Well, he's not going to wear that again, I guarantee you.
No, I hope he burns it. Oh, my. Huh. All right. Yeah, my wife did say, look, it's a shacket. And I'm like, oh, no. So, yeah, that's true. Good observation by Reynolds.
All right. Next question comes from Auburn Elvis, who says, if you could go back in time and let your younger self know that Jeremy Johnson was going to be the second coming of Barrett Trotter, would you do it? Or would you allow yourself to be blissfully ignorant in your hopes of the 2015 offseason?
No, I would have liked to have known not to get my hopes up because you understand week one was me going, well, you know, and week two was me going, So this week I'm just kind of like, you know, the thing you see on Twitter where they got the little emoticon guy who's just smiling and shrugging?
Yep.
That's me at this point. I'm just like, yep, there he is. Yep.
What me worry?
Yeah. That's it.
All right. I got a few more here. Jerry Hennin and Auburn Tweep are arguing about which year this reminded them of.
Hmm.
If you could pick an Auburn season right now that this one went with, what would you say?
Well, in terms of expectations and then not quite coming up, there's so many to choose from. You know, I mean, 1990, 1995. 1984. How about 1984, where we were number one in the country in preseason, and we went 0-2 to start the season and lost Bo Jackson for six games to injury. That's – there you go,
1984. 2003?
Yeah, yeah. But see, in 2003, we knew that things had changed. We knew that we didn't have Petrino anymore.
But we could see that we had all this talent.
And yeah.
You just couldn't understand how we lose to Reggie Ball, Georgia Tech. We had all that talent.
Oh, gosh.
All right. Next question. Eric at Wargas Eagle says, can you talk about something else besides Auburn on the podcast this week?
Well, it's too late. I wish I'd gotten this question at the beginning. We could have talked about our favorite books or something. I don't know. Yeah, but I saw that you did reply back and tell him check out the White Rocket podcast. So, yeah, Rocket podcast. When you're bored with Auburn football and you just don't want to suffer anymore, the White Rocket podcast.
You go listen to us talk about James Bond or something.
Well, yeah, or we could just make this show about Alabama losing every week instead of Auburn, you know, so.
All right. Jacob Fleming says, so where do we go from here? The defense is bad, but I don't understand the offensive game plan for today's game.
No, I don't understand it either. I mean, I don't know. I can't help. I'm not a player. I'm not a coach. I don't know.
I mean, to me, I think they had a plan. They're trying to get Kerryon more involved, Stanton Truitt. Going to try and run the ball, take some pressure off Jeremy, but it just, you know.
We didn't have enough plays. I mean, that's it. We didn't have enough plays. We live in a world where Jeremy Johnson had a quarterback rating of 30 in this game, and Grayson Lambert.
You lied to me. Release the hounds.
At least it works with Grayson Lambert being at Georgia with the hounds, right? Grayson Lambert set an NCAA completion record. I was wondering what your reaction was to that.
Well, you know what it was? You know what my reaction was?
What?
That's the best day he's ever going to have, and he was lucky as heck because South Carolina is the worst defensive team in this conference. He did nothing against Vanderbilt. Right. I don't know if you saw that. He was really bad against Vanderbilt. And when they play a good defense, he's going to struggle, and he's going to cause Georgia to lose a game. You watch.
All right.
He would not be starting at UVA.
Should we talk about the Alabama game for a second?
No, we're getting there.
All right.
A couple more questions. Auburn Tweep asked something that we haven't talked about. Why can't Auburn defenders keep their mouth shut?
I thought that the whole Rudy Ford quote was the most overwrought,
I agree.
Overhyped bunch of garbage I've ever heard. If the entire Auburn team can fall apart because he has confidence that they can stop a running back that they stopped last year, then we're in worse shape even than I thought, you know?
I agree, except that Fournette did take it personally. And he tweeted a picture last night of him running over Rudy Ford.
Good for him.
Albert Tweep says, does a losing season get Gus fired?
No.
No, it doesn't.
Gus is in shape.
All right. Daniel Emery Taylor says, what is the one biggest problem on this team? Pick one.
You know, actually, I think if our defensive line was getting any kind of pressure and controlling the run, we would get the ball back on offense, get lots more plays.
But the other team's converting third downs too often. We're not, you know, and that, so they're keeping the ball away from us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's
but, probably. I might say running the ball, honestly. If we ran the ball well, this stuff with the quarterback wouldn't matter so much.
Well, that's true. But I think we are running the ball okay. It just doesn't matter because nothing else is working.
We're not running the ball okay.
All right. Well, we can disagree.
For us. I mean, we're not. We're not running the ball okay for this offense.
Right. Well, that's true.
I mean, just think like –
I think we're running the ball well enough to win games if anything else was working at the same level. It's just that running the ball is at like a 6 and everything else is at a 2.
I would say running the ball is about at a – for this offense, running the ball is like at a 3.
Hmm. What else we got?
All right. He says, Lionel Cornback Jr. says, we didn't hire Gus to throw screen passes and run sideways. Has the offense been dumbed down for Jeremy Johnson or anything?
If a screen pass works, I say run it 100 times. I don't know. I mean, we got to do something. What would you prefer that we run? I mean, this just frustrates me. I have no answer.
Okay. That's enough listener questions then. All right. You want to talk about the Mississippi State game or you want to move on and talk about the other SEC results in this weekend first?
What do you see coming from the Mississippi State game?
I really, really, really hope Carl Lawson plays because if he doesn't play, I'm very concerned we're not going to get enough pressure on Dak Prescott and he's going to throw for 350 yards against us.
Could happen.
If Lawson plays, I think we can get pressure on him. I mean, it's a night game, but Jordan Hare and, you know, Mississippi State's solid, but they're not great. We ought to be able to.
Is Mississippi State better than Louisville was in the first game?
They're better at quarterback, but they're not better in the defensive front seven.
Okay. So it has a chance to be similar.
Yeah.
So that means
we have to play at least that well.
So it has to come down. It could come down to a turnover, a run back fumble for 80 yards again. And you just hope that the coin flip goes our way again.
The defense has to make some plays.
Right.
That's the other thing. The defense has got to make some freaking plays. They
got to. Yeah. My thoughts about the Mississippi State game is we really need this one. Obviously, for a lot of reasons.
Really, really, really.
Yes.
Really, this game.
And because after this game, we have 2 or 3 weeks where there's really not a lot happening. We've got like San Jose State, and we have an off Saturday. We have a Thursday night game. So it's like almost another month before we have a really meaningful Saturday ball game after this.
Well, and it's also like, let's be clear, if we're not the worst team in the West, it's Mississippi State
and Arkansas.
Well, I mean, Arkansas. But so we need to get a win on a Western team.
Yeah, we do.
This is it.
We need to beat Mississippi State and Arkansas and then just see what happens beyond that.
That's right.
Arkansas was the one game I thought we could lose. Now I think it's the one game I think we can win. How funny is that? It's a 180. It's done a 180.
All right. So let's talk about the other SEC games this weekend. Maybe it'll cheer us up.
Oh, that Ole Miss Bama game was like the kick six, the miracle at Jordan Hare, punt, Bama punt, all rolled into one game. I mean, no one single play in it was as big as those plays were, but it was like it had about five that were a little bit below that. Did you watch the whole game?
I watched the, well, let's be clear. I live on the East Coast. That game ended at 1:30. Okay. I watched the whole game. There was a point in the third quarter where I dozed off for a couple minutes and woke back up. But, you know, I watched the whole thing. Sure, I did.
That thing was insanely long. It started at 8:15 our time, and we were still up at 1.
It went on forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, that I don't love this big SEC game starting at after 9 o'clock.
It was one of those games where Ole Miss would be ahead by two or three touchdowns, and the game had been going for 3 hours, and you're like, well, it's all over. Ole Miss has got it. And you look at the clock, and it's like 6 minutes to go in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alabama comes back, and then Ole Miss scores like two touchdowns again. You're like, well, this game's been on nearly 4 hours. It must be almost over. And Ole Miss is up two touchdowns. It's all over. And you look at the clock, and it's like 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, is Alabama like sneaking time back onto the clock? They have the clock running backwards, you know, during the commercials. It's like, you know, well, it's 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. We'll be back after this. You come back. Well, there's 12 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Wait a minute.
No, yeah. I mean, it was a lot of scoring and a lot of passing, and that makes the game longer. So
it's a lot of passing because that's all Ole Miss could do.
You know what? There's a lot of guys at Ole Miss that I wish – this is one of those things you never say. Yeah. There's a lot of guys at Ole Miss's roster I wish they were in Auburn's roster.
God help us. Yeah, that's what's funny. You know what the difference was? I'll sum it up right here. The difference in that game last night for Ole Miss was that they didn't have any running attack, as usual, and had to pass, as usual, but this time it worked.
Well, that Kelly kid is – much better than Bo Wallace.
Exactly. That's the difference in the game.
I mean, their receivers are really good, and he was also insane. I mean, that one throw where he just chucked it up and they scored, that was stupid. So,
well, he called it, right? I'm going to bank it off of this guy. And
well, I mean, you could see why he keeps getting fifth, sixth chances or whatever. So,
yeah. But, I mean, yeah, that was the difference in the game, was that they were completing passes against Alabama. Where in previous years they won last year by just gutting it out on defense, really.
It's funny. Last year Alabama didn't score an offensive touchdown in this game.
Wow.
Did you listen to the second Audible podcast of the week when Tim Brando was on there?
No.
Okay, you should have. You should go back and listen to it.
Okay.
Because what he said on there is that this kind of game, exactly right here, he said, Nick Saban hates that,
yep.
And he hates that football has gone to that, and that mm-hmm. he's had to adapt his team to basically be that kind of thing, mm-hmm. to be a spread, high-scoring, because that's where football has gone, and that he is going to get out sooner rather than later.
I hope you're
right. And go be the talking head on ESPN.
Oh, I would love to be able to change the channel on Nick Saban on ESPN. You've never seen somebody watch Fox Sports 1 like you will if he's on ESPN. But, you know, I hope he does it.
Anyhow, I just thought that was interesting. And then the game turned out that way. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Florida beat Kentucky.
Oh, my God!
That was my lock, and it didn't come through.
There you go.
Kentucky, if you were ever going to do it, this was the window was open.
It's true.
I didn't get to watch much of that game on account of because it was boring, but how did they get nine?
I flipped back and forth.
I tried, and I kept falling asleep. How did Kentucky get 9 points?
I don't even remember.
I don't know.
Three field goals, I think.
The Red Raiders, my grandmother's alma mater, took down Arkansas.
Did you see the after comments in this game?
I heard there was something, but I don't know about it. Tell us.
Okay. Cliff Kingsbury is the Texas Tech head coach.
With a K, Cliff.
And he's a product of like Texas high school football and stuff. And apparently, unbeknownst to me, but like Brett Bielema in the off season was basically talking to a bunch of Texas coaches that run, they all run the run and shoot basically in high school over there.
Yeah.
And he basically said, you know, I'm going to I got this power football. I'm going to be playing this, and I'm going to kick all your asses or whatever. And it basically disrespected them or whatever. And Cliff Kingsbury went off in the post-game press conference about, yeah, we just kicked Brett Bielema's ass. and went on and on about it, about how this is, you know, all the – this is like revenge for all these Texas high school coaches or whatever, and Texas coaches. So,
good for him.
I just thought that was,
and he's not even the same conference that he feels that way about Burt.
No. So, I mean, and now, you know, Arkansas is 1-2 and their next three games are Texas A&M at a neutral site.
That's tough.
And then like, you know, Alabama and somebody else good.
They haven't even gotten into their heart of their schedule yet. And they're what? 1-2 you said?
They're 1-2.
Wow.
So it's 1-2. They got A&M at a neutral site, at Tennessee, at Alabama, next 3 weeks.
Well, let's talk about Texas A&M. Should I be as afraid of them now as I am? I mean, I feel like they are what we thought we would be.
Yes. I mean, their receivers are so good. Okay? I mean, they're great. And then Myles Garrett is destroying people. I mean, he's in the backfield every play, tearing people up. And they can run the ball a little bit better now. So they're really good. We're real problems. So
Missouri, I just don't know.
I watched that game, the Missouri-Connecticut game.
Why?
Because it was noon and there was nothing else on.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
It was noon. What else was on?
Nothing was on. That's why I worked on the book, John, because there was nothing on until 2:30 Saturday. That was the worst.
I was laying there watching this game.
That was the worst early Saturday schedule on TV I've ever seen.
It was terrible. This game was awful. It was a defensive struggle. Both teams' special teams were abysmal. I mean, the special teams coaches should have been brought in after the game and everybody throw tomatoes at him or something. And Connecticut is really good on defense. But they play the kind of really boring defense where they drop everybody back and just tackle you in front of them and make you march down the field. And Missouri couldn't do it. And anyhow, it was terrible. So Missouri's going to lose to BYU in a couple months. So.
I bet. Mississippi State won. Vanderbilt got their big win of the year. Enjoy it, boys. Tennessee rolled over Western Carolina. That's to be expected. Georgia rang up 52. Now, I have to think that somewhere in his little brain, Rick was thinking that Spurrier rang up Georgia for 52 or whatever it was a few years ago at Florida. Remember when Spurrier was cruising?
Yep.
And somebody came over and told him with like 2 minutes to go, you know, coach, nobody's ever scored 50 on Georgia in Athens before. Well, here goes Florida.
The first
puts the first string back in, starts throwing the ball. Touchdown, Gators. 50, 52 or 54. So I think that might have been a little revenge there maybe, but 52-20. I watched about 2 minutes of this and saw Georgia was going up, and I just thought, you know, I don't want to watch Georgia.
But again, we couldn't get this South Carolina team.
Oh, God.
They're terrible. The pressure's going to be on Spurrier.
I wish we could play Missouri, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt.
I don't want Missouri, but Vanderbilt and South Carolina, if you got those, whichever West team has those two, it's like Christmas.
Man. And somebody does, I guess.
Yeah. It may be A&M.
Oh, God. Oh, well. All right. Quick look ahead.
All right. Texas A&M, Arkansas, and Dallas.
Yeah, A&M rolls.
All right. Missouri at Kentucky.
You know, I hesitate to pick either one of them at this juncture.
Missouri is good. You know, they're good. They play good defense. You know, they're solid again.
Hmm. Yeah,
Missouri's going to win.
I'm looking for my – okay, I got it. Go ahead. Right. Tennessee Florida.
At Florida.
Remember when this used to be a big game?
It's a CBS game. I don't know why. But.
Oh, Lord. It should be Texas A&M Arkansas, but even then, that's not going to be – they're probably glad they didn't pick that one now. It's not a good – we've had a lot of not good weekends so far going on 4 weeks in the season. I'm really surprised. There's not a lot going on this weekend.
I thought Saturday night was really good. I mean, there was a point Saturday night when the Bama game was going on. Stanford USC was going on.
That shocked.
Texas Cal was going on, and the Florida Kentucky game was going on. And
that's true. Yeah, it just took – it was a late day. I mean, our game with LSU was almost like the 11 o'clock game in terms of, you know, decent games and the way it played out too.
More than one way or the other.
Yeah.
All right, Vandy at Ole Miss.
Yeah, Ole Miss. I mean, it would be like Ole Miss turn around and lose to Vanderbilt this week, wouldn't it?
Not this team.
Well, no.
Not this Vandy team. LSU at Syracuse in your weird non-conference game.
That could be fun. But LSU's going to win.
Southern at Georgia.
Southern what?
Just Southern. It's the name of the school.
They don't even have a state. They're like the Palestinians.
Yeah.
They just wander around the South. They just play at whatever team. They're always the away team. They're always the away team because they're just Southern. Yeah, we're Southern. We are literally directional university.
And then Central Florida at Southern at South Carolina. Central Florida, which lost to a 1AA team last week.
Oh no! Hey, wait a minute. Be careful how you disparage teams not looking good against AA teams.
I'm just saying.
And finally,
Louisiana Monroe at Bama.
My cold, dead hands. Lock of the week.
I know that they're struggling. I know they're hurting. I know they're hurting because I saw them on Twitter. I mean, there's literally, there are literally three Alabama fans that I follow on Twitter and don't block. After yesterday, there are literally two Alabama fans that I follow on Twitter and don't block. And honestly, why? One of them I should have blocked 2 weeks ago, but
why?
I give him another chance, huh?
Why?
Why what?
Why would you follow them?
Because they're nice.
Okay.
You've got an Alabama fan. We both got an Alabama fan friend, personal friend that's a nice guy. But they're such a minority. Yeah, so I saw them. I saw what they were saying. Oh, I was having some. I think I did some of my better Twitter work last night on the Alabama game. Some of you may have noticed I was not even on Twitter for the Auburn game. I had nothing to say. I literally had nothing. I had no comment. I had nothing of interest, nothing worth noting. And so I just stayed off of Twitter, didn't even pick up the phone the entire time our game was on. But let me tell you, when the Alabama game started, I pretty much live tweeted that entire game. I'm kind of proud of what I did there. I think I did some good stuff. I think I did some good work. So go back, scroll through my timeline. Yesterday, it's pretty good. But yeah, I'm going to lock up Alabama again. I know it's a 2-1 team.
I guess Louisiana Monroe.
They're hurting. They gave up like what 40 something points, but I think this is a scrappy team. I think that they still got a little bit in the tank. And I think Alabama can bounce back in this game. What do you think?
You know, you don't want to reach too much here.
Yeah, it could.
You want to go out on a limb.
This could be an overtime game, but I think that Alabama pulls it out. So I'm going to go ahead and lock them up as my. I like to go with the underdogs in the lock of the week. I like to find the underdogs, teams that are struggling, teams that don't look good, teams that probably going to have a brick thrown through the window of their coach's office. And I like to give them a little boost and give them that lock of the week. I'm going to give it to these what are they called? The Crimson. They're like the Alabama Crimsons, kind of like the Harvard Crimson. Yeah, I'm going to try to give them a little boost. Get them back on winning ways and lock up Alabama against Louisiana Monroe.
Good luck with that.
All right. All right. Well, what have we learned tonight, John?
We learned that you and I do not have any answers right now.
I am bereft. I don't even have any good sound effects at this point.
The only answer I got is that I expect us to go medieval in offense. I expect us to be like run the ball. That's what we're going to start with.
We're going to take Dak Prescott, chain him to the wall.
Well, I mean, we're going to try and play keep away.
Get out the Iron Maiden.
You know, we're going to try and run the ball, keep the ball out of their hands. And
can we do that?
That's what we're going to try to do.
Well, I mean, but you don't seem to have much confidence in our running game. So is that possible?
Well, I mean, again, like we're going to do it. We're not
regardless of consequence. Regardless of
what I'm saying, we are not going to abandon the run. And I think we're going to call whatever 5 running plays for every 1 passing play in this game.
Let me close with this, as the minister would say. I'd like to close with this. I've pointed out many times, I think you and I have talked about it, that one of the worst statistics, one of the worst little factoids you can give out is to say, well, that team lost and they gave up on the run too soon. They gave up on the run too soon. Usually when teams, quote unquote, give up on the run too soon, it's because they've been trying for a quarter or two and they're not getting anything with it and they've got to do something else. It's not a matter of, well, we're getting 0.5 yards per rush, but if we just kept doing that.
I disagree completely because, again, running the ball has a cumulative – passing the ball does not have a cumulative effect.
Okay.
Running the ball has a cumulative effect where if you do it and do it and do it, you can wear the other team down. And as the game goes along, at some point you'll start wearing them down and breaking bigger and bigger runs. If passing game doesn't work that way, you could throw the ball 100 times and it's the same effect as the first one.
Is our offense going to run and wear anybody down Saturday? Are we going to wear Mississippi State down, do you think?
I
hope.
To me, that is the most likely game plan. But, you know, again, we're not going to throw Jeremy out there and ask him to throw the ball 50 times. And I don't think we have any – I haven't seen anybody we can put the ball in their hands and they're going to make a bunch of magic stuff happen. So I think it's going to be go back to basics and run the ball and try to wear Mississippi State down to take control of it as the game goes along. So
12 quarters in the books, Sean White has not played a down. Do we see him on Saturday?
I know this. We better see him or a Wildcat quarterback.
Have we seen one Wildcat quarterback?
No.
So every single snap.
Yes.
I don't think there's ever been a season before that we've gone three complete games and not seen but one
person.
That's
again what I was saying earlier. We freaking pulled Nick Marshall out to put a Wildcat in.
That, which is like the insane that
yes
he is a living that's like going to the zoo and pulling a wildcat out of the wildcat exhibit and putting some other animal in there to be the wildcat. That was not a bad little analogy, was it? I like that one. That was pretty good. I've rendered John speechless.
Somebody just tweeted they think Lawson has a hip fracture, so
I've heard that. I've heard that, and I just can't imagine. I don't know. I think our whole team has a hip fracture. I think our show has a hip fracture. All right.
Well, I hope that, we come next week with some answers, maybe.
I hope we come with a win, too.
Amen.
Our time is up. We thank you for yours, and I hope that this has done something for you other than just make you even more frustrated than you already were. War Eagle John.
War Eagle Van.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.